Once, when I was 16, a plane went supersonic directly over my head. I was walking in the woods when it happened, thinking of some story I was going to write, perhaps, or how great it would be if Doreen Fournier weakened some Friday night and let me take off her panties while we were parked at the end of Cushman Road. In any case, I was traveling far roads in my own mind, and when that boom went off, I was caught totally by surprise. I went flat on the leafy ground with my hands over my head and my heart drumming crazily, sure I'd reached the end of my life and while I was still a virgin. In my 40 years, that was the only thing which equaled the final dream of the Manderley series for utter terror. I lay on the ground, waiting for the hammer to fall, and when 30 seconds or so passed and no hammer did fall, I began to realize it had just been some jet jockey from the Brunswick Naval Air Station, too eager to wait until he was out over the Atlantic before going to Mach 1. But, holy shit, whoever could have guessed it would be so loud? I got slowly to my feet, and as I stood there with my heart finally slowing down, I realized I wasn't the only thing that had been scared witless by that sudden clear sky boom. For the first time in my memory, the little patch of woods behind our house in Prout's Neck was entirely silent. I stood there in a dusty bar of sunlight, crumbled leaves all over my T-shirt and jeans, holding my breath, listening. I had never heard a silence like it. Even on a cold day in January, the woods are usually full of conversation. At last a finch sang. There were 2 or 3 seconds of silence, and then a jay replied. Another 2 or 3 seconds went by, and then a crow added his 2 cents worth. A woodpecker began to hammer for grubs. A chipmunk bumbled through some underbrush on my left. A minute after I had stood up, the woods were fully alive with little noises again. It was back to business as usual, and I continued with my own. I never forgot that unexpected boom, though, nor the deathly silence which followed it. I thought of that June day often in the wake of the nightmare, and there was nothing so remarkable in that. Things had changed somehow, or could change. But first comes silence, while we assure ourselves that we are still unhurt and that the danger, if there was danger, is gone. Derry was shut down for most of the following week, anyway. Ice and high winds caused a great deal of damage during the storm, and a sudden 20-degree plunge in the temperatures afterward made the digging out hard and the cleanup slow. Added to that, the atmosphere after a March storm is always dour and pessimistic. We get them up this way every year, and 2 or 3 in April for good measure if we're not lucky, but we never seem to expect them. Every time we get clouded, we take it personally. On a day toward the end of that week, the weather finally started to break. I took advantage, going out for a cup of coffee and a mid-morning pastry at the little restaurant 3 doors down from the Rite Aid where Joanna did her last errand. I was sipping and chewing and working the newspaper crossword when someone asked, "Could I share your booth, Mr. Noonan? It's pretty crowded in here today." I looked up and saw an old man that I knew but couldn't quite place. "Ralph Roberts," he said. "I volunteered down at the Red Cross. Me and my wife, Lois." "Oh, okay, sure," I said. "I give blood at the Red Cross every 6 weeks or so." Ralph Roberts was one of the old parties who passed out juice and cookies afterward, telling you not to get up or make any sudden movements if you felt woozy. "Please, sit down." He looked at my paper, folded open to the crossword and lying in a patch of sun as he slid into the booth. "Don't you find that doing the crossword in the Derry Daily News is sort of like striking out the pitcher in a baseball game?" he asked. I laughed and nodded. "I do it for the same reason folks climb Mount Everest, Mr. Roberts, because it's there. Only with the news crossword, no one ever falls off. Call me Ralph, please." "Okay, and I'm Mike." "Good." He grinned, revealing teeth that were crooked and a little yellow, but all his own. "I like getting to the first names. It's like being able to take off your tie. It was quite a little cap of wind we had, wasn't it?" "Yes," I said, "but it's warming up nicely now." The thermometer had made one of its nimble March leaps, climbing from 25 degrees last night to 50 this morning. Better than the rise in air temperature, the sun was warm again on your face. It was that warmth that had coaxed me out of the house. Spring will get here, I guess. Some years it gets a little lost, but it always seems to find its way back home. He sipped his coffee, then set the cup down. Haven't seen you at the Red Cross lately. I'm recycling, I said, but that was a fib. I'd come eligible to give another pint 2 weeks ago. The reminder card was up on the refrigerator. It had just slipped my mind. Next week, for sure. I only mention it because I know you're an A, and we can always use that. Save me a couch. Count on it. Everything going all right? I only ask because you look a little tired. If it's insomnia, I can sympathize, believe me. He did have the look of an insomniac, I thought. Too wide around the eyes, somehow. But he was also a man in his mid to late 70s, and I don't think anyone gets that far without showing it. Stick around a little while, and life maybe only jabs at your cheeks and eyes. Stick around a long while, and you end up looking like Jake LaMotta after a hard 15. I opened my mouth to say what I always do when someone asks me if I'm all right, then wondered why I always felt I had to pull that tiresome Marlboro man shit, just who I thought I was trying to fool. What did I think would happen if I told the guy who gave me a chocolate chip cookie down at the Red Cross after the nurse took the needle out of my arm that I wasn't feeling 100%? Earthquakes? Fire and flood? Shit. No, I said. I really haven't been feeling so great, Ralph. Flu? It's been going around. Nah, the flu missed me this time, actually, and I've been sleeping all right. Which was true. There had been no recurrence of the Sarah Laughs dream in either the normal or the high-octane version. I think I've just got the blues. Well, you ought to take a vacation, he said, then sipped his coffee. When he looked up at me again, he frowned and set his cup down. What, something wrong? No, I thought of saying. You were just the first bird to sing into the silence, Ralph. That's all. No, nothing wrong, I said, and then, because I sort of wanted to see how the words tasted coming out of my own mouth, I repeated them. A vacation. Yeah, he said, smiling. People do it all the time. People do it all the time. He was right about that. Even people who couldn't strictly afford to went on vacation. When they got tired. When they got all balled up in their own shit. When the world was too much with them, getting and spending. I could certainly afford a vacation, and I could certainly take the time off from work. What work, ha-ha? And yet I'd needed the Red Cross cookie man to point out what should have been self-evident to a college-educated guy like me, that I hadn't been on an actual vacation since Joe and I had gone to Bermuda the winter before she died. My particular grindstone was no longer turning, but I had kept my nose to it all the same. It wasn't until that summer, when I read Ralph Roberts's obituary in the news, he was struck by a car, that I fully realized how much I owed him. That advice was better than any glass of orange juice I ever got after giving blood, let me tell you. When I left the restaurant, I didn't go home, but tramped over half the damn town. The section of the newspaper with the partly completed crossword puzzle in it clamped under one arm. I walked until I was chilled in spite of the warming temperatures. I didn't think about anything, and yet I thought about everything. It was a special kind of thinking, the sort I'd always done when I was getting close to writing a book, and although I hadn't thought that way in years, I fell into it easily and naturally, as if I had never been away. It's like some guys with a big truck have pulled up in your driveway and are moving things into your basement. I can't explain it any better than that. You can't see what these things are because they're all wrapped up in padded quilts, but you don't need to see them. It's furniture, everything you need to make your house a home, make it just right, just the way you wanted it. When the guys have hopped back into their truck and driven away, you go down to the basement and walk around, the way I went walking around Derry that late morning, slopping uphill and down Dale in my old galoshes, touching a padded curve here, a padded angle there. Is this one a sofa? Is that one a dresser? It doesn't matter. Everything is here. The movers didn't forget a thing. And although you'll have to get it all upstairs yourself, straining your poor old back in the process more often than not, that's okay. The important thing is that the delivery was complete. This time I thought, hoped, the delivery truck had brought the stuff I needed for the back 40, the years I might have to spend in a no-writing zone. To the cellar door they had come, and they had knocked politely, and when after several months there was still no answer, they had finally fetched a battering ram. "Hey, buddy, hope the noise didn't scare you too bad. Sorry about the door." I didn't care about the door. I cared about the furniture. Any pieces broken or missing? I didn't think so. I thought all I had to do was get it upstairs, pull off the furniture pads, and put it where it belonged. On my way back home, I passed The Shade, Derry's charming little revival movie house, which has prospered in spite of, or perhaps because of, the video revolution. This month they were showing classic SF from the 50s, but April was dedicated to Humphrey Bogart, Joe's all-time favorite. I stood under the marquee for several moments, studying one of the coming attractions posters. Then I went home, picked a travel agent pretty much at random from the phone book, and told the guy I wanted to go to Key Largo. "Key West, you mean," the guy said. "No," I told him, "I mean Key Largo, just like in the movie with Bogey and Bacall. 3 weeks." Then I rethought that. I was wealthy, I was on my own, and I was retired. What was this 3 weeks shit? "Make it 6," I said. "Find me a cottage or something." "Going to be expensive," he said. I told him I didn't care. When I came back to Derry, it would be spring. In the meantime, I had some furniture to unwrap.